Welcome to the History Slam podcast from ActiveHistory.ca. Here's your host, Sean Graham.
Thank you, Adam. Welcome to the History Slam, everybody. I am Sean Graham, coming at you today nearly live from Ottawa, Ontario, where we continue the Historical Thinking Week here at Active History. And today we're going to be talking about teaching history at the high school level, some of the challenges, some of the strategies that accompany teaching high school students history in 2014. Now, in order to understand how history is being taught in high schools, I went to a high school to talk to some folks. First up, we have a grade 10 student who's taking Canadian history. Then we have a grade 12 student who took a world history course. And then I followed that up with a conversation with two teachers who have taught both the grade 10 history and the grade 12 history courses. And we talk a little bit about the reaction that they get from their students to history. Just a note that this podcast was not recorded in Ottawa, and we're not going to reveal where it was recorded just for the anonymity of the students and the teachers. First up here, we have Jamie. You are a 10th grade student taking Canadian history, right?
Yes.
And now, just in general, what is history to you? Like, when you go into a history class, what do you expect to learn about?
When I walk into history, I believe that I'm going to be learning about what's happened to my country or other countries that have had experiences with Canada. And I think that I'm going to learn about what makes the country important or what is important to the country and remembering their past.
So you're taking the Canadian history right now. Based on what you've expected, how has the course been so far now that you're, 8 weeks into it or whatever it is?
So far, I'm liking the course a lot more than I expected. I wasn't thinking I was going to enjoy the class very much because I hadn't enjoyed history in the past, but I've really enjoyed learning about the First World War, and I'm excited to learn about the Second World War. It's a lot more interesting to me than what we've learned in the past, and so I'm liking it a lot so far.
So you mentioned that you didn't expect to like it. Why did you not expect to like the class when you started?
Well, in the past, they've always said to us, well, teachers have always said that we wouldn't really learn about wars in grade 7 and 8. Mm-hmm. But coming into this year, I didn't think I was going to either. But I've really enjoyed it. Like I said, it's surprising. And I've never really been intrigued or interested in what we're learning. And I found myself, as I was studying for previous tests, that I've really enjoyed learning this information. And in the past, it was always just something I had to do, and I was just doing it to get a good mark in the class and not really interested in what we were learning.
Do you think that it's the content that you're more interested in, or is it the way it's being presented now?
I would say both, because in the past, my teachers haven't really, I feel like they didn't know the content of the course as well as they should, and so they were kind of assigning us projects to teach ourselves what we were supposed to learn, and they didn't really think that the course was very important, I feel, sometimes. Mm-hmm. Just the way this has been taught, it seems like the teacher's a lot more interested in it, which results in me being more interested. Yeah. And also the content. I'm also enjoying the wars a lot more. And overall, just everything has made it to be a lot better of a year with history. Mm-hmm.
Do you think that history is relevant to you as a 10th grader in 2014? Do you think the information you're learning matters, or is it just something that you find somewhat interesting?
Yes and no. I would say for me that I know that it does relate to me, and I'm enjoying learning about, since it is the country that I live in, the country I'm born in. I think it's important to know what's happened in the country, but I can see for other students how they would maybe not enjoy it and just be doing it to get their credit. No, I can see how the other students aren't liking it because it's very tedious almost with the PowerPoints and everything. But once you sit down and look at it again or understand everything you're learning, it becomes a lot more interesting for me, I find.
Do you feel as though you're being asked to think critically about it, or are you just being asked to remember dates, names, events? What sort of stuff Is it being presented in a way that you're allowed to be analytical, or is it more just reciting stuff and memorizing?
This year, I would say it's a lot better with being able to be critical and analyzing things, and that also is probably something I haven't enjoyed about other courses, that I'm not able to analyze it or really think about it. It's just the dates and everything. And when I think about history, well, coming into this course, I thought I was just going to have to remember a bunch of dates. I wouldn't be very good at that because I usually don't have the greatest memory for things like that. But the fact that I can do well on tests because I understand the information and I'm able to think critically about it and give my opinion almost on what is being taught, that's very enjoyable for me.
Mm-hmm. Is that the sort of thing that you think would makes it a little more interesting, not only to you but maybe to your peers, because it gives you a chance, I'm sure you don't do it socially, but at least in class you can all sit around and talk about these things, have maybe a bit of a debate and a back and forth. Makes it a little more engaging maybe?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And also, some of my friends who had previously taken it, they still talk about it to this day, and they're still done the course, and they say how much they liked history and everything to do with it. And yes, it has been one of my favorite courses so far this semester, because I feel we do talk about what we've been taught after, and it still stays in my head.
And then just finally, what's your sense of kids or your classmates' perception of history? If you had to sort of try and summarize, maybe just the room that you're in with that particular class, I mean, what is the sense of the course? Are most people like you, or are most people somewhat withdrawn and maybe how you used to be and maybe a little more reluctant to really engage in it?
I would say this year my class has enjoyed history a lot, and it is an interesting class, I find, for a lot of people, as everyone's contributing to the conversations and discussions. But when it comes to the work after class or projects and tests, that's when people start to slip. But the actual content of it, people enjoy.
And do you think, what do you think is maybe the best way for, you know, people like me who are trying who talk about history a lot, and we do it professionally, to get people involved or get people interested in it, get people your age interested? What sort of strategies do you think work best to get high school kids into history?
To get high school kids into history, I find you really need someone who likes teaching the course, who is passionate about the course almost, to get the other students to be the same way with it, because in different courses, some people, they don't like what they're teaching and they don't really care what if the students are going, if they like it as well. So if the teacher is very interested in the topic, knows what they're talking about, and wants the students to be successful, I find that's very helpful for all students.
So it sort of sets a tone in the room and everyone sort of picks up. Okay. So really that presentation style is key.
Yeah.
So as opposed to, so do you feel as though then that, let's say you were learning about the 18th century instead of the 20th century, that the way it's being presented would still be engaging to you?
Yes. I think that if I had been taught the 18th century more with more interesting concepts or different ways of teaching it, then it would have been more interesting.
Thank you so much for doing this. I appreciate it.
Okay, no problem.
Now we are here with Brianna, and you're in the 12th grade.
Yes.
So you're in the last semester of high school. You're about to graduate, and you're interested in history, not only doing it at a post-secondary level, but as a profession.
Yes.
So exactly what do you want to do? What's your goal?
I really want to go through university and get my undergrad in history and be able to teach it to high school students. And I really want to kind of go around the world and teach history, I guess, from the Canadian standpoint. I want to go to Europe and Australia and New Zealand, teach English along with history kind of together.
Okay. So what is history to you? Like, when I say history, what does that mean to you? What is the term?
When I think of history, I think of the events that happened in the past that usually shouldn't reoccur. Usually when you think of history, to me, I think of things that are lessons that we learned rather than events that we have to memorize, because I feel like even the bad events or the events that weren't as impactful are still lessons that we can bring into modern day and the future.
So you feel as though history is really relevant?
Yes, I do.
So do you feel as though maybe that there's a general lack of knowledge of history, and maybe that's a detrimental thing to society?
I think it is. A lot of people in society, especially classmates, they don't take history seriously, so that when they go and they learn about it, they just memorize the facts and they don't really bring it into their own life or their own kind of ideas on their decisions, where I personally like to think of history as lessons that you can learn and bring into your life. So,
do you think that your classmates feel that way because of maybe the way it's being presented? Or is it just that they don't think the content's relevant? Like, what do you think the cause of that is?
I think that a lot of students don't tend to enjoy learning history is because of two main reasons. I think that the first reason is because it's difficult to teach history in different methods. Usually it's a PowerPoint or a handout. And the other reason, I think, is that oftentimes when it is taught, it's taught as something that you need to memorize, whereas it's not really like a story that you can grasp. It's more facts and events that you need to memorize.
So what is it that you really like about history then?
I really enjoy history, and I really, really like telling people and kind of teaching people about what happened and what kind of that brings to the future and what happened and how that impacted today and how, if that reoccurs or if that happens again, what could happen in the future and how we can change things because of our history.
Within that context, looking forward, how aware are you of sort of the back and forth that goes on at history or in history at the post-secondary level? Are you conscious of that, or are you more thinking of it as this narrative story as opposed to something that gets analyzed and there's critical debate going back and forth? So there's not really one version of history. Is that something that you're really conscious of as you're going through your high school?
I think that to be able to analyze history, you need to make sure that you grasp it fully. And the best way to grasp it is to be able to put it in a story and a concept where people can kind of absorb it and really understand it. Then you can take it and analyze it using different tactics or different points of view. But you can't do that until you thoroughly understand what you're talking about.
I guess the issue then is, how do you get people to that point where they can analyze it, right? Because you said that some of the memorizing is not very exciting and it's not very accessible to people, because it can be kind of boring just to memorize. So how do you think we get people to that point?
I think that it takes a teacher that is willing to use different methods of teaching history rather than being stuck in their ways and kind of just doing a PowerPoint every single day. You need to be able to bring in technology, bring in different resources, and be able to kind of maybe involve drama or anything that's up and getting up and being involved. Because if you're sitting in your chair, it's just, you're going to hate coming to the class, you're going to hate learning it, because if you're always sitting taking notes, any teenager, anybody in the world is not going to like that.
So you think it's really more about the presentation mm-hmm. of the content than the content itself?
I think it's balanced. I think that if it's presented well, then the content itself will speak for itself. Mm-hmm. If it's presented poorly, then the content won't reach the audience, I guess, that you're trying to portray it to, because they're not listening.
Right, but then but what I'm saying then is in the way I think you're explaining it, is that you can make something like the Irish potato famine or the Second World War are equal in terms of their interest level, depending on how it's presented.
Yeah.
So if someone maybe isn't interested in a time period, you think that can be resolved through a different presentation method?
Yes.
Okay.
I do.
Given that you want to teach history, mm-hmm. moving forward, what area of history are you interested in, and sort of what sort of different perspective do you think that you can bring to a history class?
I just like all, like, the European kind of history, and I like both of the world wars. I like teaching that. I think that I would bring a much more enthusiastic, because I'm a very enthusiastic person and I like to think differently. I also usually put myself in a different point of view than the majority of people. So I think that by having different viewpoints, it would be easier to teach history and kind of analyze it.
And do you think that your experience in high school has shaped that for you?
Yes, I've like definitely fallen in love with history because of the classes that I take in high school and the teachers.
So you want to do a history major next year?
Yes.
In European history?
It's just a history major.
Yes, but your focus, you think, in your course selection would be Europe.
Probably, yeah.
Okay. So then back to that other question then, why Europe if and not Canada or the United States if it's about the presentation?
Well, because Europe does connect with everything else, really. If you go back really, really far, before Canada was even a country, Europe was having tons of history and tons of events that was going on. And Canada couldn't become a country until they went over and they asked and they made all the paperwork and all the fun jazz that went along with that. They couldn't just... So I don't think analyzing Canadian history is really enough. You'd have to go back all the way, which is European, which connects.
Well, that sounds good. Well, thank you very much for doing this, and all the best.
Thank you.
And finally, before we go, now we're going to talk to some teaching professionals. Best in the business here. We have Sarah and Dave. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
So we were talking to a couple of the students before, and the sense that I really got from both of them that in learning history, they cared a lot more about the way it's presented than the content itself. And I'm just wondering if that's similar to the reactions that you get from a lot of your students.
I find for sure, and I've only been teaching history for 2 semesters now, but the delivery definitely matters to the current students. They're so electronically driven that old style of a classroom has gone the wayside, and as much as it was effective and it's still the content, the material is still there, that delivery has a negative impact on the students and they tune out and will find ways of distracting themselves.
Yeah, I think that the teacher is the hook, not the content. You hook them with your delivery method, your engagement, your passion, and the content is then just the secondary thing.
So you don't feel boxed in by, let's take the grade 10 course, that you start in 1910 and are expected to get to whatever it is. Is it to the year 2000 or is it free trade?
I've never gotten past 1950.
Right. So you don't feel boxed in by having that period and saying, this is what I have to teach, as opposed to maybe something else. Like, let's say, Quebec separatism and the FLQ crisis. Mm-hmm. And maybe that might be a little more interesting. So you don't feel maybe boxed in and say sort of somewhat restricted in terms of the content because you feel as though you can reach them through the way it's presented.
I feel boxed, totally time constrained.
Right.
There's so much put into the curriculum. There's just no way you can do anything justice if you were to try to cover everything. And so that's why I give up on the second half of the century in many ways, just to have the quality rather than the quantity. Having said that, when I first started teaching, the way we went about it was thematically rather than chronologically. Mm. So one unit was French-English relations. One unit was Canada at war. One unit was Canada at home. So then you were able, within that umbrella, to pick and choose the things that would... And I, personally, I really like that, rather than just the straight chronology.
I don't have any experience with anything other than teaching it in order. But I find the exact same thing, that you do end up missing out, and especially with grade 10 boys, there's always an interest in the wars. Mm-hmm. So you can be speaking to something and a kid will bring up a concept or an idea that happened. And it's like, so where does this fit in? And you're like, well, I can't speak to that because I have to keep going. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we won't make it past 1953.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that part's hard because you have that interest piece of the students. And it's like, well, I have that engagement. So should I run with that? Or do I focus on the fact that I have to get through so much time in terms of a time frame?
Mm-hmm. What then is the goal of the class? Is the goal of the class to teach the content, or is the goal of the class to teach the methods and the critical thinking and the analysis skills? Mm-hmm. And then subsequently the writing skills and all that? I mean, you know, as a teacher, what do you want your students to really get out of the class?
Good question.
Well, according to the ministry, we're heading towards that historical analysis with the new...
Skills-based.
Right.
Thinking skills and writing skills, research skills. Content is secondary.
Use that to back up your point of the why question. It's like strand A is everything about the why. Why are we studying this? What does it affect?
Well, sorry, I was going to say, it is unfortunate because on the other hand, as a proud Canadian... I really feel there are things that students should know about Canada's history. That's just straight content, you know, that they should have a good understanding of what has gone before them. And I find sometimes, I'm getting in some ways the feeling that that's being edged out over this idea of more emphasis on the skills. It's not that the skills should go by the wayside by any means. Do both, but I just kind of feel like maybe from above there isn't that push to be so much about Canadian history is important. It's more about critical thinking is important, and it is. But you can learn critical thinking across several subject areas, and yet I feel very passionate that they need to know Canadian history.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is the only history course that they have to take, there should be some Canadian content involved.
Mm-hmm. Is it maybe increasingly frustrating then that you have to then cram it all into whatever it is, 4 months or 5 months, whatever a semester is, that you have this sense that you want to teach all this content, but then you can't.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't have the time to do it. And then, so I guess the question becomes, how do you create a class that allows for some content, but also has the skill development within that time constraints? It strikes me as that I don't know how to find that balance, and I'm sure that's something that you would struggle with every day in that class, right?
Yeah. I think the hardest thing is finding the time to think about that and put a course together that finds that balance, because again, 17 years ago it was fairly content heavy emphasis, and so I find that being able to rework your course and improve and everything is necessary, and yet time for that is often an issue. The other constraint though was grade 10. I don't think in grade 10 they have the motivation or the sophistication to understand Canadian history. If it's the one mandatory credit and we want them to know some Canadian history, I think it should be in grade 12, ideally, maybe in a few more years of maturity under the belt, because we all know when you talk to anyone as they get older, far greater appreciation for history, want to know more. How many people have said, oh, I wish I'd paid more attention to Canadian history in school, or I wish we'd learned that in school. Talk to any older Canadians, they now want to know Canadian history, and I think that's lost on a 15-year-old. We're not all, like, I teach American history also, and I'm always torn, because American history in many ways is easy to teach. The kids are there, they want to hear it. It's just a lot more bells and whistles and everything else. And Canadian history isn't about that. If you're actually to do justice for a lot of Canadian history, it's the subtle, the politics, the negotiation. It's not the flashy stuff. And that takes a maturity to understand that how important that stuff is, that it's not just the flash.
To the motivation piece, as I introduced this podcast to my class, I was trying to find some volunteers. I was asking them what they think about history so far. And this was only 2-3 weeks into the semester. It was very early. But all of them immediately went to horrible experiences in grade 7 and 8. And they associate Canadian history with those early years and just being forced to remember names and dates. And then all of a sudden you lose that content piece because they don't want to have that anymore.
Yeah.
They don't. We have to remember dates? Well, yeah, kind of. But what do you mean? And it's like, well, that sucks.
Yeah.
And it's just because they didn't have any sort of consistency from before, and there seems to be an overlap where they just were learning the same thing over and over
Pioneers.
Yeah, and there's no change in the theme, in the content, and they end up getting bored. To counter that, the one thing that I did with, I think we all do it in the grade 10 course, is the My History presentation. So you start off on the first day and you ask the students, why don't you like history? What do you feel this disconnect? And immediately all I have nothing to do with this course. I have nothing to do with history. But you make them go home and study their family, and they do a presentation on their family. And all of a sudden, today I finished my presentations and I asked them, how many people feel a little more connected to this class? How many people, World War I makes more sense to them now? And I would say at least 90% of the hands shot up, that students get it and they're connected, and all of a sudden they do find that piece. And then you run with that and you're like, see, this can be a part of you. You can put your personal stamp on history, making it more interesting.
Yeah. I was in your class in the fall, and I can't, whatever world, something was going on in the world, and you're trying to connect it back and say, here's the roots of it, or what's going on in Ukraine right now, and then the Russian intervention. And I mean, there's historical 9/11. Basis for this.
It was early.
It was early in the semester.
It might have been 9/11.
It might have been. But, if the United States were going to intervene in Syria or something.
Yeah.
And like, these things are relevant. The history of it matters to the situation right now. But, I mean, my experience of what you guys were talking about in 7th and 8th grade is the same thing.
Yeah.
It's just memorize the stuff. And it was terrible, and I really didn't like it.
See, I had an awesome experience in grade 7 and 8.
Really?
That's what got me into history.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just memorize this, memorize that. It was actually...
No. Like, I mean, that's certainly part of it. It was the teacher.
Yeah.
And to me, that in grade 7 and 8, and I've taught in grade 7, I started out in that, generally people that are put into social studies mm-hmm. aren't necessarily anyone that has any sort of passion for history.
Right.
Or geography. You're a core teacher, and you might have had your English degree, you might have had your math degree, and there's a real issue there, I think. As a core teacher in grade 7, I had to teach math. That is absolutely ridiculous. I cannot explain to those kids things that just happened in my head and I knew how to do them and somehow it worked out. I can't teach that. And I felt I was doing a very big disservice to that class in math that year, and recognized that they were now moving on and they may not have gotten the foundation from me that they needed. And yet I think that happens in history, but we don't care about as long as English and math and science and are okay. The other things are kind of the fluffy outer stuff, and it's okay. And that comes through even in high school. Extra help. No one comes for history extra help. And yet math extra help is packed every session. The parents push the kids for extra help. The kids feel they need to go to extra help to get their head around it. History? Nah. And the parents don't see it as important, and it is, I mean, it's the same idea. You need some more talking with your teacher and going over stuff, but no one does that for history.
Why do you think that is? Is it because they don't see it as an avenue for post-secondary, or is it just a general malaise about the subject?
Yeah, just don't see it as important. I just think it's secondary to everything else. But you also said the connections to the modern things. They also don't see themselves as connected to that. You ask most of the grade 10s, look at what Putin's doing. Look at what's happening. What are we going to do with Crimea? You know, this is World War II starting out all over again. Let's make a connection there. And they're like, who cares? You know, they don't see themselves connected to external, particularly political and possibly world-changing external events.
Is that more recent? You've been doing this longer than Dave, but has that been a trend, or is that something that you've noticed your whole career, that the students can't make that connection to the past, or even just world events, that there's sort of this insular nature to high school?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's part of the beast of being a 15-year-old, right? You're teens are self-absorbed. Their world is literally what's before them to some degree. It's the exception. It's the kids that, you know, are the ones that we label the bright kids, that are curious, that do want to think beyond their own neighborhood. That lack of curiosity is another thing, and that gets hammered out of them in elementary school, the majority of them. And so they don't question, and they don't look, and their eyes aren't open, and they're not listening to news. I think it's changed a little bit because we used to only have a few channels of TV, and the family had to decide, and the parents maybe. I mean, I watched 60 Minutes every Sunday because that's what was on the one TV in my home. So I knew what was, you know. And now everyone just goes to their own bedroom, you know, chooses whatever they want off of Netflix, and there's no need to ever find out what's going on in the world.
So is that maybe your biggest challenge coming into a history class, is to try and overcome that, as opposed to maybe, you know, whether it be the strategies or the amount of content that you have to cover, is actually trying to get them invested? Is that the biggest challenge, you think?
Light a spark,
yeah.
Because I'm just wondering, like, how, is your first 2-3 weeks
rather than sort of laying the groundwork and saying this is the lead up to the First World War, or mm-hmm. is it more maybe general saying this is history, this is why you should be interested in it, this is why it's fun, and this is why it's good
for
you to know.
That's what we start with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, what is history? Why mm-hmm. do we need to know history? There's no content. And as we said, and then we'd go into what's your history?
Right.
So that hopefully then along the way they can, oh yeah, my grandparents lived through the Depression or what have you. Although then we're also getting to the point where their parents, yeah, my parents lived through the 70s. Well, but they don't, like, if we don't even get there. I mean, there's also, as we move away, mm-hmm. as you know.
One of the questions on that My History is, whose parents are baby boomers?
Oh, really?
Right? That's one of, like, the questions from the original site. It's like, now it's like,
Gen
yeah,
X?
Nope.
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they don't... you know, like I have a bit of fear. I always get caught up right in World War One. I always go longer in World War One than I should. And then, and I've been teaching this, I don't know how many times I've taught Canadian history. And I feel this need that they need to know this stuff about World War One. It's just, oh. And then, but then I have to find myself cutting, just slashing stuff out of it to get moving on. And I always feel guilty, like I'm doing a disservice to Canada and Canadian history. It's like a sort of a slash and burn approach to it, and it's always this pull of what I feel I really would like them to know about and what they have to get through.
What have you found is maybe the most effective way of getting through that wall and trying to connect them to it? Like, what really works for a 15-year-old in 2014?
Department head is very big on this, and I've been doing this as well, probably coming out of phys ed with that, but build relationships with the kids. And if you can get them to buy into you, and it goes mm-hmm. back to what you were saying, Sarah, about the delivery, if you get them to buy into you and your approach to it, mm-hmm. then they will listen mm-hmm. and they will be guided by it. But if you come in and you board them, or you come in and you immediately start talking about the causes of World War One on the first day, it's like, oh, here's another history class, like, just write down some notes. But if you get that relationship built, then you can go from there, and then you can build the what is history relationship to them and take off from there. So I think it's a personal bond mm-hmm. that creates a good classroom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I find that they need to see me as a person.
Mm-hmm.
I let my students into my life to some degree. You know, there's some teachers that the kids don't know anything about them. My students will know about my family, my British husband, my two little kids driving me nuts. You know, I don't go on and on about it, but I want them to see that I'm a whole person, not just this, you know.
Like a robot who lives
yeah.
at the school?
Yeah, yeah.
Melds into the wall.
Yeah. I actually let them know my first name. I mean, they're not, you know, they don't call a teacher by the first name here or anything, but I let them know I have a first name.
Uh-huh.
And I also tell them how I'm a history geek. And how I love history. And I also say, you're not all going to love history. And so some of you are going to have to just realize that you're going to have to, you know, plod your way through this. But I'm hoping that some of you, you know, it'll rub off on you. And I think that when I've talked to students, one of the things, and this is just what Dave's saying, just the teacher's enthusiasm and passion for it, even for the kids that aren't going to do any more history, but at least they, it's all right. It was pretty interesting. They kind of give you some credit just for liking you and your enthusiasm. And if they can have, somehow see you as, you're all right. But, I mean, that's far more important than anything else to start any class off with.
I want to get back to something that you said earlier, Sarah, about the maturity level of grade 10 students in teaching Canadian history. Because one of the things that's really important, I think, in teaching history is to present multiple points of view, mm-hmm. multiple versions. Say the First World War conscription mm-hmm. and the different points of view over conscription. How hard is it to teach multiple points of view and try to explain that there isn't one version of history? That's something that it took me a long time to understand in high school mm-hmm. classes. And I mean, it's just, how do you do that? And is that the sort of thing that you need that maturity for? And maybe that's why in grade 7 and 8 it's more rote mm-hmm. memorization, because mm-hmm. maybe they can't, mm-hmm. the skills just aren't there
yeah.
to compute two different versions of the same event. So just how do you address that in your classes?
I think they can look at it from different angles once they're aware that there is. One article I use is, title of it is, History is Written by the Winners.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we get into whose history is it, who got to, whose history is in the textbooks, like who got to tell their story. And so, and the fact that we need to look at the people whose voices weren't or aren't as commonly as heard. At least we're getting better at mm-hmm. that. You know, it's still sort of throw a little, you know, text box on one
did
side of the page. Yeah, did you know? There were Native Canadians that fought. And it's like, come on, right? So at least now we can get other resources. There's a push to get other resources and bring those voices mm-hmm. up that never, and women too, any minority, which is nice to bring in. So I think the kids are pretty good at looking at different angles. I don't find a challenge.
Again, less experience with it, but I have not had a problem with that either. To go back to the World War I and going to war for Britain and the French-English relationships, mm-hmm. there's a really easy assignment sheet that goes right hand in hand with the literacy test, mm-hmm. where they just read a really quick blurb from Borden, Laurier, and Bourassa, and it just lays it all out there, and then you give them a spectrum, and it's like, where would every part of the country fall? Mm-hmm. And from my limited experience, they get it right away. They understand mm-hmm. wholeheartedly that, well, French Canadians didn't see it this way, and they can see why, and they can actually answer the why question more often than not. Mm-hmm. I haven't had that no. concern.
But it does raise the issue, again, there's neat activities that are categorizing and sorting and weighing options and who's more, you know, all those higher level thinking skills. And that's the interesting stuff. Mm-hmm. And the kids will buy into it, depending on your enthusiasm for it, but it's time-consuming.
Right.
And then that's the issue. Do I spend 2 days laying the groundwork, doing the super... I mean, 2 days would be optimistic. You know, you could make a really cool thing, lesson, but it would be over several days. But I only have 2 weeks to do that entire unit.
Right.
The curriculum expectations don't jive with the critical thinking mm-hmm. expectations mm-hmm. that need time.
Well, one thing I've always wondered is that in doing the critical thinking, does the content not sort of become ingrained that way? Like, so for me, I like the CBC stuff, mm-hmm. like I just know it mm-hmm. because I've just worked with it and all the analytical
yeah,
stuff that I've done.
Years.
Yeah, it's been a while, sure, but it becomes ingrained. And yes, I take for granted a lot of times in my writing that naturally everybody else knows
yeah.
that this guy had this role in this yeah. and this. Yeah. But I think that's just part of it, is that in doing the analysis, the content is there.
I think you lose a lot of content, though, because you do only have 5 months to
right.
get through this massive time frame. And in order to do those activities, there's still content that has to be removed. Mm-hmm. That's the problem. The content is ingrained, absolutely, but it's a watered-down content.
Okay.
Or it's content for one, just for that activity. Like
yes.
if we say that, you know, the reading with the leaders and conscription, yeah, so they'll get those guys and their opinions and everything else, but that will come at a price of having to chop something else
right.
out, mm-hmm. you know, and you have to make that decision where to cut and where to expand, you know.
Well, then I guess the question is what is of greater value, is being thorough on one thing at the expense of something
mm-hmm.
else, or doing both things really quickly
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and really not going into a lot of detail
mm-hmm,
on either,
mm-hmm.
and which is more beneficial for
yeah.
the kids. And is that maybe a decision that you would make based on the students, that particular group, or just sort of maybe on your overall pedagogical philosophy?
Mm-hmm. Good question. I have found, particularly with the applied and essential kids, but also with like academic kids generally, it's amazing how many of them just want a textbook with a worksheet.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd think they'd rather do a really cool activity, you know, that you've put a lot of effort into,
diorama.
And you know that they buy into that because we're all told, you know, the evils of textbooks and how boring, and the kids will say all that, and yet that's what they want
mm-hmm.
at the same time. And it's this, which is it? You say you're bored as anything, you don't want to read and write, and yet if given the choice of different tasks or whatever, they'd go straight for a worksheet.
Right.
And it's, why do you want that?
Yeah.
Rather than sitting and talking about stuff or, you know,
yeah.
ranking and talking, you know, I don't know.
Saving face with the essentials, I would say.
Mm.
I found that. Yeah. I find that because I have some experience, mm-hmm. more experience with that than I would mm-hmm. with the grade 10 history class, is it's hard to get them to communicate because they're on this tightrope of, I don't want to sound dumb, mm-hmm. and I don't want to sound smart. Mm-hmm. Because mm-hmm. if I sound too smart in front of my peers, that will also get me bullied.
Right.
And comments will be made because, oh, you know, kiss ass. And,
right.
And this brings me back to something I was thinking when you were talking and how it gets ingrained, you pick up all that stuff. But you are in the top whatever percent, intellectually, degree holding, a spark for education and lifelong learning. You are too. Okay? We all are sitting here.
Yeah.
But if you were then to look at the classes you serve, that's not
no.
the face
right.
of, right? And right. And so, you know, they're saying, oh, every kid can learn. Yeah, but not until they're ready or interested.
Not until they're ready.
Yeah, and we had this discussion before. They might not be ready to learn until they're 22.
Right.
There's some people that, and as I've said, it's when they're 40, I wish I knew more about Canadian history. Or they pick up a Pierre Burton book because now they're interested in it. But it took that long for them to come around. Mm-hmm. And that gets back again to me. I always kind of say, you know, at least a couple more. You know, if it was grade 12, I might have more of a chance to get a few more of them buying in mm-hmm. than what we are getting.
Yeah, Pete Holmes is a comedian. He has a bit about this, about how school is wasted on children.
Yeah.
Is that really school should be for adults because adults are interested.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they would enjoy it a lot
yeah,
more.
Yeah,
let the kids just run yeah. around and do whatever they want. We can go to school.
Yeah. And the interesting thing, like when I say pick up a Pierre Burton book, that doesn't have to be a university grad.
No.
Is finally the guy who has been working in a garage since he was 18, but now he can... Now he's got an appreciation for it. And I think that's, again, my whole thing, especially with Canadian history, is Canadian history is great, but you just have to dig a little deeper to get that stuff than you do with some... We're inundated with American history, and it's Hollywood, right?
Yeah.
And so that's where the kids... You don't get Hollywood. They don't see that in Canadian history, then a lot of them switch off.
What role, then, do you think... the civics course has. I mean, could the civics course not help to push that a little bit more? Because to be a citizen, you need this background and connect those two courses somehow. Or is the
and that used to be in the curriculum. Like, remember when I said thematically?
Yeah.
One of the units was Canadian government.
Right.
And you did that. And usually you did that first just to lay the groundwork.
Taken out.
That was taken out to make a half credit of civics. Yeah. That was the idea anyway.
I personally find that the civics course is rushed because it is only a half credit and that it deserves a lot more time and that the careers course should be wiped out because, as we were saying with critical thinking can be taught in every subject, careers can be taught in every subject, mm-hmm. and you can easily find time to fit that into a course, and it doesn't need as much time as it gets in a mandatory course. Mm-hmm. And if you were to make that civics course a full course, maybe make that the grade 10 mm-hmm. history course, and then mm-hmm. move that grade 10 Canadian history course to your 11-12, like you were saying.
Two mandatory credits.
Yeah.
I mean, and think about what is our purpose. Ultimately, what's our goal? Like, are we trying to, we're shaping citizens. We want them to vote. We want them to be informed. We want them to think critically and look at their options when they're voting. And yeah, I would totally think civics could be a full and it used to be way back, you know, if I talked to my parents, there was a course that, you know, and many American jurisdictions civics is a, you know, a full length course.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a bit of a blur the way we have to do it.
Like, I have kids now that I have a large portion of my class now that I taught civics careers to, because I had three sections of it last semester, and I'll ask them questions about what we talked about, and it's gone because you have to fire through it so fast.
And yet, if you'd had time to do some really neat stuff and look at political issues and how the parties have shaped around them,
the mock election assignment that of days past, I don't know many that do it anymore because you just don't have time to set it up because you talk about the time that one activity takes. Well, that's a fantastic activity, and it really shows everyone, like, party building, the actual election process, everything that goes into voting. But to do it properly, you're looking at least 2 weeks. Mm. And your course is only
8.5
Yeah. Yeah. And now you're going to do all of the active citizen and the global citizen and everything else that goes along with it. It's like, how do you fit that in? Like, how do you make something worthwhile? How do you make that a worthwhile education? I don't know how you do it with the way the system's set up.
Yeah. And the other pressure, and I always say this, is that it would be great if I could teach these courses and not worry about evaluating.
Yeah.
That's the pressure to produce marks. Like, we just had fifth week reports, which means that you've seen the kids for four, and then you're supposed to put out this report. And it's not just a anecdotal, how they're getting on, are they engaged, have they been showing up on time, that kind of stuff. You can comment on that, but it's a mark book printout or software that generates the marks. And it's a mark book. I have one mark. I have to lay all sorts of groundwork. And it always bugs me, because I know that there's other teachers that it's almost a bragging right or something to have pride over how many marks you have in your mark book. That they like this idea when they do their printout and there's 90 marks in it. And I'm like, I don't get that at all. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't seem, but there is that pressure external, above and board, ministry, parents to, evaluate, produce marks and everything. And I just always say it'd be great to be a teacher if we didn't have to evaluate.
Because it takes away from the
focus
learning.
Focus on the learning.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, moving forward, with the people listening to this will be across the country. There's a new curriculum coming in Ontario. We don't need to focus on that specifically. But moving forward with this, the things are going to be changing a little bit. What do you think the future of history in high schools is? And are you optimistic for students' engagement moving forward? Do you think it'll get better, or will it get worse, or will it stay the same? How do you feel moving forward with history?
I am cynical. They talk about the fact that all the world's information is at their fingertips, and it is. But that they're not going to go looking for it. Just because it's out there doesn't mean they're ever going to see it. And what makes content or information interesting is when you talk about it with someone else, not just look at it off a screen. What's the point of that? And so that's why, one of the things they say, you don't have to focus on content because it's all out there. Let's focus on thinking skills. Well, yeah, but, trying to find that balance. I just see the kids as we move away. I know that World War I is just going to get dropped, and I don't know, I guess I'm old-fashioned, but that kills me to think that World War I would not get its due in Canadian history course. I think that will be a disservice. And I'm afraid as we move along, something's got to give. And they already got rid of, it used to be from 1900,
mm-hmm.
right? So they already got rid of, now it's from 1914. So the next thing to go would be, so let's start at 1920 or 1919.
Right.
And that's one thing I'm worried about.
Mm.
But it's hard as a teacher, history, any course, to compete with them being on their phones and social media the song and dance in many ways. Yes, you'll get kids, some of them, but even the best of kids are so distracted by phones and stuff that's going to be a real issue as we move on too. It's just going to get worse.
Yeah, well, I was stunned. We were here earlier and with the podcast, the one girl who was going to come in, they were texting during class, which I thought was stunning, but nobody else seemed to find that overly surprising that happened.
They're allowed. Bring it.
It's IT.
The official.
The way that I countered that, and I implemented it after a student leadership conference last September, November. And what I started doing was, instead of putting your phones away, I want you to get your phone out. And I don't take them and put them in a bin.
Mm.
I say put them in your pocket, because that immediately leads to you texting under your desk. So I want your phone on your top left corner of your desk. And I know everyone's got something.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And you find out very quickly the kid that doesn't, right? The rare kid that does not actually bring a phone or an iPod to class. But your electronic device is in the top left corner of your desk, and now I can see it.
Keep it where I can see it.
It's exactly. It's that model, and it actually has been very effective. Mm. And now all of a sudden, whenever I'm doing a scan, I'm not necessarily looking for kids that are staring down at their crotch. Mm-hmm. I'm looking, and I can see that a phone is out mm-hmm. on a desk where it's supposed to be, and everything's good. But when I see there's some phone missing, and you're looking at your crotch, okay, well, now we got a problem. Mm-hmm. And then it also leads to the going back to the bring it, the one thing I do kind of buy into in my class is I stopped answering knowledge-based questions. Mm-hmm. Anytime a kid asks me a question that is, so what year did World War I start? I'm not answering you because you have that at your fingertips.
Yeah.
Right. And I immediately say, look it up.
Yeah.
And it's been effective because it does let me teach that skill of find the information because you have that ability, and that's how you're going to be the one. That's how your generation is going to find information.
Right. Yeah, the simple stuff is...
Right.
Yeah.
And then if you want to ask me a thinking question or an application question, now let's have a conversation.
Yeah.
Because having all that content is part of this thing that we have more information than ever, but we're not smarter.
Yeah.
We're no smarter for that.
Oh, there's a fantastic demotivational poster flying around that one of the teachers here showed me of the moon landing. And it says that they have less technology in this picture than your grade 8 son or daughter has on their cell phone, and yet they can't pass math. So.
And I don't sound like an old fuddy-duddy. Just using that word makes me one. I mean, I'm sitting here looking at my phone, right?
Yeah.
But I try to incorporate using the phone, you know, I'll ask questions and have them answer and have it up on the screen when I can. But there's not a lot. You can't just be always doing that. It's gimmicky, It's fine. It's a good hook, whatever. But you're not going to rely on that. And a lot of the board's going towards, having the kids bring in their own stuff. And, so if they need to do research for an essay or whatever, well, you can't do research on a phone.
No.
And to expect every kid to have a laptop or even a tablet or iPad is not fair at this point. And yet that's where they're going to very quickly,
mm-hmm.
like next year.
Yeah.
The expectations being downloaded onto the family to provide.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. They're not going to be supporting labs, computer labs, and things like that. And you can't expect kids.
No.
And, another big thing is they're not going to be buying textbooks anymore. To go to e-books. Well, fine. But then again, there's the expectation everyone has access to that. You can't say to everyone, get out your tablet if it's on them. Mm-hmm. In some jurisdictions, sure. But certainly not in our in our school. So I think that's a big issue. I just find it's demoralizing. I think I'm a pretty good at getting the kids to buy in and listen to me. And, I try to use humor and all that stuff. But it's still demoralizing, even when you think you're really doing a good job and you still look out. Well, and I haven't done this on the desktop thing. And half of them are looking down at their crotch. And I talk about respect and how would you feel if you were up doing a presentation and no one was making eye contact or following. And, that might make them feel guilty for 20 minutes, but they cannot. The addiction to social media,
that's what it is.
Is unbelievable.
I had a student, they did presentations for an assessment, and I was giving them feedback as groups, and I'm talking to four of them, and he's on his phone.
Mm-hmm.
Standing in front of me on his phone.
It's an addiction. And they certainly don't see it as rude or disrespectful, and I get that. They don't see it as that. But they need that immediate feedback constantly from peers and everything. Mm-hmm. It's unbelievable. Yeah.
So
then trying to get them to be interested in women's roles on the home front during World War II, you're up against pretty tough competition.
So not an overly optimistic.
I'm afraid
forecast.
Not. So. I'd like to be.
Mm-hmm.
I really would.
Yeah. So then, but then maybe it's inherent on us, and I'll include myself for what I do at the post-secondary level to meet them on those terms then.
Yeah.
Right, and come up with new strategies and continue to evolve, and
which I think is what we're.
Is what you're saying.
We're constantly trying to do.
Yeah, and that's what you're saying. And the old methods won't work anymore.
Yeah, and I, you know, there's some great things online in terms of simulations and activities.
I know a website that's really good with a lot of stuff on it, a lot of written stuff.
No, but and interactive things like McGill, McCord Museum in McGill, the 1920s, and you get to pick your outfit and you go to the beach and how you act and the kids, you know, neat stuff like that. But that creates designers and creators, and I don't have the skills to create those things. I count on someone else doing it, and Canadian history is not where people are putting their budgets towards to create these things. So I'm all for, I'm trying to do blended learning in my classes. I do use Do2L as my class website, and I put stuff on there, and we have online discussions, and they drop their assignments there, and then there's some ministry content that I put on there, and some of it is good, and there's little interactive things, and some of it's horrid. If I could get a really good overall course, that I'd use more of it, but it's just the stuff's not there, and the budgets aren't there, and the time to learn it all is not there, and it just, the constraints. And we have to provide our own equipment.
Right.
Like, I'm wanting to go to the Google Apps in Education conference. It's on a weekend. Okay, fine. So my 3- and 5-year-old won't see me for 2 days, the only 2 days they get to see me. I'm willing to do that. Oh, okay, I'll take my outdated laptop that doesn't have a touch screen, you know, and I'm thinking I'm going to go there and everyone's going to have a tablet or an iPad and I'm going to look funny. And that's me. How are the kids feeling in classes that don't have that technology?
Right.
And it's not like, and there are, I'm not getting it from my employer to then be able to use any other place. If you're expected to use technology, your employer provides it for you.
Right.
If I want a tablet, I got to buy it myself. I don't even get a tax break. You would think at least we could a partial write-off for things that we're using for our work, but nothing. And so there's just so many. You're teaching with one hand tied behind your back, so to speak. Mm. Sorry, that was cynical again.
That's okay. That's okay. No, I think it's a call that, you know, things need to change, and not just that. Maybe a ministerial level or an administrative level. I mean, everyone involved in history. We need to think about these things and address them and how we're going to do things as things increasingly become digital and move towards the digital while recognizing that there are barriers to digitization and trying to figure out this balancing act.
But even with digital, I mean, but when do you have your most meaningful things? It's like my seminar courses way back in university when we didn't even have the internet, but we sat around a round table talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Totally.
And I think until we're robots, I still believe that being face-to-face with people and talking about things is where we really can light a fire and get people interested and engaged and everything else. And I also sometimes feel like there's such a push for going tech that you're seen as sort of, you know, a relic if you want to hang on to doing a Socratic lesson and throwing up questions and trying to get the kids
to think.
I
mean, I agree that the value is in that seminar, but it's getting people to that seminar and how to hook them in to get them to that point. And at some point, you're going to have to sort of reach on the other term to get there.
Yeah.
Right? There's that intermediate step that you have to get to. And I think that's where we fail. Because once you get people to that point, people are in.
Yeah. They'll buy into
it. And they like it. It's just getting them there. And that's sort of the issue. And I think that's sort of what this whole Historical Thinking Week is about.
Yeah.
And thinking about these issues and how do we get there. So I think this was a very fruitful discussion to that end. So, Sarah, Dave, thank you very much for doing this.
Thank you very much.
Appreciated.
Always a pleasure.
No problem.
Pleasure's all mine.
So there you have it. Four different perspectives on history and the way history is being taught at the high school level. My thanks to Jamie, Brianna, Dave, and Sarah. Be sure to check out Active History all week for more articles and features as part of the Historical Thinking Week. If you have any questions, comments for the podcast, historyslam@gmail.com, Twitter @DrShawneeFever. And if you're out and you see Enrico Palazzo, please say hi for me.
Thanks for listening to the History Slam podcast. Be sure to check out Active History for more features, articles, and be sure to subscribe on iTunes.